how can I be sure that my grandchildren will be Jewish? I know. How will our actions today shape our community in years to come? No, that's what we're going to be talking about at our live recording of Rabbiting on Thursday, the 1st of December in London.
We're going to have guests on stage, which is always fabulous. And I'm really excited that Daniel Kaner, the genius who is the most amazing songwriter, musician, performer, past guest, and of course, creator of the theme tune for Rabbiting On, will be with us playing live too.
Our Rabbiting On community. In other words, all of you out there have just been such a special part of the show since its very beginning, and we're really looking forward to meeting some of you in person and to just being together for this special evening. So if you haven't already, go have a look at the JW3 website to buy your tickets.
I'm just looking forward to being with the two of you and, of course, the audience with us. But it's great that we get Robin down to London and even a sleepover. So come and join in the chat. Go to the JW3 website, jw3.org.uk, to buy your tickets so that we'll see you on the 1st of December.
Now, on with the show.
You can't double barrel anything with a burger, right? Because everyone gets my name Berger mixed up with a burger, but then you sound anything you put together sounds like something on a menu. You'd be a Bayfield burger. It's a problem.
I think there's a restaurant waiting to make that.
With fries.
Welcome to Rabbiting On. I'm Rabbi Robin Ashworth-Steen, and I'm here with the very lovely Rabbis Debbie Young-Summers and Miriam Berger. Hi, both of you. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I'm just back at work for the first day after a bout of COVID, my second official bout about a year after the first, and definitely easier than the first.
But wish you better, Debbie.
Thank you.
I'm feeling quite the opposite, sort of recharged and ready to change the world, having had 2 days, thanks to the organisation Selem, which Robin helps to organise, which created a 2-day training programme for clergy looking at kind of social justice work. And so now I feel ready to go out there and change the world.
I love that. Yeah, it was a great couple of days learning with colleagues, and just a reminder to make sure we all have spaces where we get to step back and to recharge and strategize and think about the big picture. I'm especially grateful for it because we're in the middle of moving out of our building at Manchester Reform Synagogue, Jackson's Row. Got our last service in 2 weeks. It's all very emotional and exciting. And we just had some of our members around to our new temporary home, and we fixed a mezuzah on the office doors. We sang together, and it just starting to feel a little bit like home.
How lovely. But does it mean you can't refer to yourself as Jackson's Row anymore? Because wasn't that your address?
Yeah, we're struggling. It's really hard renaming yourself, isn't it? As our ancestors in the Bible, Torah know, that name changes are important, aren't they? So yeah, we're trying out JR so that we're kind of a little bit of the old, but going into the new. But it's quite hard to change. But I think when you move house or move home or anything, these things take time, don't they? So we'll settle in slowly. But given that our new place has a vegan cafe on site, which on my first day in the office, I visited 4 times, very happy.
Are you a vegan, Robin?
Did you not know? Yes, I am a vegan. Yeah.
Biblically, yeah. We just need to add a letter when we change our names, right? Like Avram, Avraham, Sarai, Sarah. So I think you just need to become, rather than Jackson's Row, previously Jackson's Row, or the synagogue previously known as Jackson's Row.
Nice.
You know, I think it's just PJR.
Or Jackson's Row, yeah. We'll play around with it more. Yeah.
Might need some work.
Yeah.
So, Nu, hold your horses. We need to get this out of the way at the beginning of this recording. Who have you both got managed to sell your tickets to watch us live at JW3?
I'm hoping my mum will come.
I like the standards we're setting ourselves. Immediate family.
I was having a lovely chat to someone at Kiddush, actually, who was sort of not a regular to the synagogue, who was there with family who are, and I just introduced myself, wished them long life. And they said, oh, yes, we love the podcast. We're hopefully going to see you at the live. I thought, yes, fantastic. Turned out to be Miriam's chair. So almost family anyway.
She is wonderful, but yes, almost family. I've got my husband and son coming, and I'm worried they might be our head hecklers, because I suspect they might have plenty to say about, you know, rabbi family life.
I love that. That's good. Yeah. And I'm sure we'll see lots of friends and family there. It's quite a commitment from the Mancunians, but we'll see if any have made the trek down south.
And so what is it that we're getting people to get tickets for? You need to be at JW3 in London to be at a live recording of one of these Rabbiting On podcasts. And we can't wait to see who is in the audience that day. Hopefully it won't only be immediate family, although I've always thought of community as pretty much just an extension of immediate family. So as long as everyone feels like Rabbiting On family, they don't actually have to be related.
Great. And you can always look in the show notes for anything that we refer to as well. It does definitely feel a funny thing to use the platform for shameless self-promotion. So it actually does help us segue into what we're talking about this week, which is just what on earth is going on in the world in general, but crucially, what's happening at the moment in TV. And we know that television really reflects the zeitgeist, the time that we're living in. So a good chance for us to talk about what's happening in the world as well. Quite hard to know where to start, but I'm going to start with a program that I have committed myself to watching every night, which is quite a commitment, which is I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. I'm sure most listeners and we all know this program. It's been going for many years, hasn't it? It's celebrities in the jungle in Australia. But of course, there's been a conversation raging over social media and in synagogues and Kiddush, I'm sure, about Matt Hancock, the former health secretary, who's got into the jungle. And there's been dozens of complaints to Ofcom, the media regulator, from angry viewers. Do you two watch this program? What are your thoughts about it?
I'm just sort of following it on Twitter and Facebook and watching the kind of debate unfold. And I watch clips of it that people post, and the debate over kind of redemption, really, and whether this is the way to go about getting redemption. I think for me, the really fascinating part of watching all of this unfold is something that I've really valued professionally and personally over so many years, which is it's all about knowing people and relationship. And, you know, my interfaith dialogue background was always about when we know the other, you can't hate the other. And that's almost what you see happening. Like, I think people are hating on him for sure. And with, you know, excellent reason. You know, the bereaved families who were separated from their loved ones are rightly incandescent that this is how he gets to redeem himself, and that someone who broke the rules that he had made is doing this and is being paid very well for it. But when you get to know someone on TV, they become a relatable human being. And actually, it's that side of reminding ourselves that when we know someone, hating them is much harder.
I think it's a fascinating choice of ITV to have invited him in, right? Like, you know, in terms of their role to bring in the viewers, I mean, extraordinary. The amount of coverage that it's got on the BBC with, like, you know, people on the BBC talking about this ITV program just highlights the fact that somebody made an extraordinary decision, which is how can we create such controversy in who's in that place? And there's something about a little bit of me feels played at times like that. And it's kind of probably the opposite of sort of Robin saying, I've committed to watching every night. And I'm kind of like, oh, I feel like I'm just playing right into their hands if I turn it on. Like I don't want to be watching, so that I can't say you're asking, you know, this was a really important political minefield, which you're now stoking the flames of just for clickbait kind of purposes and for viewers.
Robin, have you always watched, or is it just this year that's grabbed you?
No, I've watched it like a long time ago. And it wasn't because of Matt Hancock that I started watching. I just needed a bit of escape in the evenings. And I'm very much like with what Miriam's saying. I definitely know that I am an actor in the drama that is unfolding. But I just think it's absolutely fascinating as a kind of social commentary. It's a very passive thing, obviously, in some ways, because we're not having a conversation. I'm not having a conversation with the celebrities. I'm watching a heavily edited show. So I'm really aware of my piece and what I'm playing in it. But I'm so interested. This is, by the way, welcome to Robin watching TV. Not at all fun. Dissect everything, make it really boring. But I do think it's really interesting social commentary on the public-private, which we've talked about a lot as being relatively public figures, and what it is to see someone's private life or aspects of it on the television. And part of me thinks that what's happening is deeply wrong. I think that a serving MP, it's just not appropriate for him to be on there. And I think that I'm very aware when I'm laughing at things that I'm embarrassed about that, that I think that he shouldn't be on. And I think that's also interesting. I'm always interested in when I go along like part of the crowd and do something that actually my principles are against. So in a very boring Robin way, it's like a kind of interesting social commentary that I'll write a thesis on one day.
Although part of that public-private debate with this one, I think that's really interesting, is lots of people have said, how on earth can someone who should be serving their constituents take the time to do this? And part of me is like, yeah, that's outrageous. But if we sort of reflect that back on ourselves, the hours I'm sure MPs work are probably well above and beyond what even we do, which is already insane. I'm sure he's got a bit of toil built up.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I think there's a sense that he will become a has-been very, very quickly. And he's kind of using this moment as a way of being able to say, how do I extend my shelf life? That actually, yes, he's a sitting, you know, MP at the moment, but does he think that he's got a long-term kind of place in politics? And if not, what's next? And it's that piece that he's sort of making that segue and using this very, very public platform to make sure that he's sort of extending that possibility of how does he become a household name, ideally, like not for the reasons he has become a household name, but perhaps actually even to be the kind of, you know, you can earn a lot of money by being the villain that was in politics, because there's plenty of game shows out there.
By nature of him being there, he's taking up so much airtime away from the other people as well. And all focus is on him. You know, he said early on in it, I've come here for forgiveness, which obviously made me think about High Holy Days and how we understand forgiveness. And
it's a shame it's not later in the year. We could have used it.
I know. Yeah, it really could have been a good sermon material. Because forgiveness is something that I think is quite private. And I also think it's like, who's the forgiveness coming from? If it's a sense of letting go, and for him, a sense of having to go through something challenging to show that he's kind of redeeming himself, maybe. But I also know, like in my own leadership, whenever I come into a situation where I'm leading, which is his example of, and I come with my own needs that I want to be met, that's a dangerous place to be in. Like I have to meet my own needs elsewhere, not through my job or through my leadership, you know, whether it's therapy or a night out with Anthony, whatever it is, I have my spaces to talk things through. I've got colleagues. I don't put my needs into my workspace in that way. When I heard him say that, I thought there's the danger, there's the blurry line between it, because you're not going to find whatever forgiveness you're looking from in that space. And ultimately, people will get hurt along the way.
One of the ways that I have found myself watching little snippets of I'm a Celebrity has not just been on Twitter, but this weekend, a friend and I were watching Gogglebox, which is one of those shows that I've never really understood. And now I feel like I might get completely hooked. And there was just something really fascinating about feeling like you're watching TV with other people who you don't know, but you feel like you start to know them. And again, that sense of that public-private, it's actually really compelling TV, discussing what's on the TV with people that you're not with.
But do you not think social media has essentially made life that? That like in the same way as Gogglebox is kind of the snippets of the world via the people watching TV, I sometimes think like Twitter and Facebook and stuff is just that like sidebar commentary on the world, you know, the bits of the news that somebody has highlighted to you via their social media feeds, or the bits of kind of celebrity gossip that someone's highlighted to you in that way. I just think social media is the Gogglebox of the world.
But there's something so warm about Gogglebox as well, because you do get to know the people you're watching with. And Robin, you were talking earlier about this time of year and how you kind of end up watching more TV. I think the TV that we have at this time of year is also really important. Like, you know, Strictly with the glitter and the lights and the feel goodness of it. Again, I only started watching Strictly during lockdown, but it's such a joyful thing on a dark, cold night. And then Bake Off, right? You've got the Great British Bake Off just finished this week. I won't give any spoilers in case people haven't seen the final. But it's just wholesome TV. There have been a lot of complaints about it this year, but actually I've really enjoyed the series.
Oh, why? What have the complaints been?
What's the gossip? I've not heard this.
Are things like people feeling that the challenges now are almost trying to trip the bakers up. So what they're producing just isn't as impressive as it was in previous series because the time restraints are such that they're bound to fail. So the final pieces in the final probably weren't as impressive as they have been in other years, but actually I still absolutely loved the whole series. Like, it's just such wholesome TV, that sense of warmth of people doing something so lovely, like baking cake and making noodles and crying over cake. Like every year you're like, I'm not going to cry over the cake, and people cry, and it's just, it's really wholesome and warming on a cold, dark night.
I'm worried that the producers of Bake Off have noticed something in British society that perhaps we wouldn't want to acknowledge, which is what you're watching is wholesome fun and something lovely and a feel-good thing. But what they know is secretly people to prefer to watch people fail. So they're trying to trip them up because actually the British public love, you know, the car crash cake rather than the perfectly finished thing that they that leaves them feeling inadequate.
Mm. Oh, I don't know if
that's
quite
a good thing. But I think that's partly why I like watching reality TV. Although I think there are boundaries and I think it can go wrong very quickly. But things like Bake Off, maybe I'm a celebrity, although maybe that's a bit of an outlier. I love seeing humanity on the screen. Like, I love when it reflects the ups and downs, the failures, the mistakes, the tears. And I love feel good stuff because I think social media in the world that I live in anyway through my phone is not feel good. Like, I never come away from having scrolled on my phone on whatever it is and feel better about myself or have had a kind of laugh with others. It's a very isolating thing.
I'm going to have to recommend some Twitter accounts for you, Robin. There's some really wholesome stuff out there.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, I don't think I follow the good. I've never really worked it out. And I always find myself addicted to those awful videos on Facebook. Sorry, awful. It's my subjective.
Yeah, you just keep scrolling up through them.
Yeah, and I like, after half an hour, I've no idea what I've watched and I feel bad about myself. But Debbie and I do have a great weekly ritual, which is, and I think this is the way to watch TV, is we have a WhatsApp group. It's called Rabbinic Drag Chat. And we watch RuPaul's Drag Race every week. And it makes me think of Gogglebox, this idea of like making everything community, you know, like having a moment, a ritual moment in the evening or the week and doing it together and getting to share and going on a journey together. So I do think like watch parties are great ways of doing this as well.
I love this idea that we can have an event to do something together, even though it's just watching telly.
I think I now understand why you two are just nicer people than me, because I have basically two types of television watching. One is with my husband, which means that I don't have the agency of which we choose. Like he's like, you'll enjoy this. And it's always terrifyingly real stuff about like basically awful things in society and terrorism and then my obsession, which is I basically watch the news on like a rolling 24-hour cycle where I'm literally watching the very same clip on the BBC News again and again throughout, you know, at different times of the day. And the last thing I'll watch before I go to bed is the news. And the first thing, like literally as I wake up, the news goes on and he's always like, do you think anything's changed between, you know, in the 6 hours between turning it off and turning it back on again? And the blur, there's like always a blurred boundary of like, was that actually on the news or was that on one of these scary terror related kind of dramas that you've made me watch? And I just think it leads to a lot of overly kind of anxious look on the world and a slight suspicion about everybody.
I almost feel guilty that I'm not consuming as much as I should, because you're probably much more up to date and relevant when you address anything in the world, Miriam. But my core way actually of consuming news typically has been for a good decade now. Every Friday through the post, I get a magazine called The Week. And the week is a summary of the week's newspapers. So each story has different viewpoints from different papers. And there's always like a in a good news section, and there's a gossip section, and then analysis of big stories.
I'm so excited that you use that as your example, because a very good friend of mine is the editor of it, and a big shout out to him, because he'll be very thrilled that it's just got that kind of standing here.
I mean, I actually, it's a really important part of my week, and it quite often I will be like saving the good news stories for sermons. I've had lots of material from it make its way into my sermons.
I think what you've been both saying really makes me think two things. One is the importance of anything that we do in life having intention around it. So it's really interesting, because I'm very much like Miriam with the news, and I tend to be in my echo chambers and I'm kind of a bit obsessed with it. But sitting down with the paper and going through it, there's like real intention in that. And we know the importance of ritual, of carving out time. And I don't know, I think that we want to create worlds where we have lots of variety and diversity in, don't we? It's really important to make sure we're kind of consuming things from different sources and diversity, because otherwise we are just hearing about each other and everything. And the other thing it made me think, which I am trying really hard to do at the moment, is how to honour Shabbat in my life. And it kind of makes me think a little bit about what we're talking about, the doom scrolling or the like obsession around news, or I'm a bit of a TV addict anyway. So how to switch off, especially when we work on Shabbat. And my Shabbat now, when I'm working and leading services, is very tech based. So I have to look at my emails because the link's in my emails. I have to look at my phone because I look at Facebook Live. So it's very hard to disconnect. And I haven't quite worked out how to find my own Shabbat from not necessarily TV, but like how I consume things and my phone. I've done loads of things. Like I've put a curfew on my phone. I try to charge it separately from my bedroom, like, because I know that I can get quite sucked in, but I've not done that for a while. And I do feel like sometimes I'm just, you know, tunnel vision, and I want to look up and have more intentional moments as well. So it's helpful for me.
It's really interesting, actually. I think the week does that for me, right? It is that sense of, this is one of those things that I will do on a Saturday afternoon, usually, if we haven't got guests, and or maybe on a Friday night. And it will be my sort of ritual over Shabbat, where I reflect on what the week's been, but not in a space where it can take me down all sorts of dark holes.
I think it's also interesting that kind of the impact piece, the what does what we watch on TV, how does it impact kind of family life, the other people kind of that are watching with us, our interactions, that piece that you were saying, Debbie, about kind of, you know, Bake Off being a wholesome family time. I've always wondered about the fact that I have the news on every morning, you know, the BBC Breakfast presenters are our kind of extended family in the morning. I'm not a really morningy person, so I like any excuse not to have to talk. So Naga Monchetti, like, she'll talk to me. Ben, from a very young age, has been like, Mommy, I don't need my coat today. You know, Carol says it's not going to rain, that kind of like, you know, if Carol Kirkwood says you don't need a coat, then that's fine with me. But that kind of piece of, what does it mean from such a young age to be just letting the news also wash over you? I often notice kind of the what stories Ben will like sit up and take note, and what just clearly washes over and he's not even aware of. You know, this week there was a two-year-old who died of the living conditions, basically the mold in his family council home, and the coroner has determined that it was his living conditions that have absolutely ended his very young life. And that thing of, what does it mean for an 11-year-old to be hearing that, to understand that, to know that's the reality around? You know, I can see it from both angles, people saying how awful that you subject your child to that at such a young age. And actually, we're never old enough to know that's happening, right? We're never grown up enough to go, oh yeah, that's something I acknowledge and can deal with. But actually, what does it lead us to do? How does it lead us to act? How does it take us forward in being able to say, I'm receiving all of this stuff all of the time? At what point do I take a step back and say, now what am I going to do with that? How is it going to change me? And therefore, how am I going to change the world with that knowledge?
Yeah. I wonder whether like part of the answer to what you were saying, or the questions you were asking, is just like with Torah, we never read Torah without commentary or interpretation or conversation. So in some ways, whatever we're consuming, the Jewish response would be to do it in conversation. Because you're Google watching box. That and Ben's there, he gets to have the conversation with you. He gets to ask the questions, to struggle, but also to not hold it inside. And if I'm reflecting back on the, you know, when I'm consuming things and seeing awful things like that through my phone, I'm very isolated. Like, I'm not talking to somebody, but actually some of the things we've been sharing, we're in family or we're on a WhatsApp group sharing our reflections. And maybe that's a way to kind of bridge this, to make it communal rather than isolate, like a separator and not a disconnector as well.
I think it's also what community does. Like, hopefully the synagogues we're creating are synagogues that, you know, what are we told? The only architectural thing that our synagogues have to have are windows, right? And our televisions are windows onto the world. But how do we make sure that we're able to say, if we know this is what's going on, therefore, what do we do? And it's good to be having this conversation this particular weekend, because I think it's this weekend that's kind of been given to us as a, you see all of that that's been given to you. This is the day, at least, that you can say, go on then, do your bit to change the world.
Yeah, Mitzvah Day this Sunday, isn't it? So this amazing charity that was set up as an idea to hold a ritual, a marker once a year to do a mitzvah. But obviously the encouragement to fill our lives with mitzvot, of good deeds, of making the world a better place. And I'm sure, well, we know across all the Reform synagogues and the wider community, there's loads of great Mitzvah Day things happening. Anything you want to share before we close our podcast about how you're spending your Mitzvah Day at your synagogues?
We're having a tea party, intergenerational tea party. And I think the original plan that it was going to be particularly focusing on looking after families who are looking after Ukrainian refugees and bringing them together. But I think that has proven an impossibility. So we've kind of shifted the focus a bit. I think Mitzvah Day activities have always been so engaging and have often appealed to people who wouldn't come into shul for other things. So, you know, litter picking and clearing up cemeteries and working with other local faith communities to do local projects, you know, collecting for the food bank, things like that.
So we're doing lots of those kind of collections and signposting. And primarily what we're saying is, don't let Mitzvah Day be a day. Let Mitzvah Day be the day you commit to a year of mitzvot. So we are putting out a very, very long menu of here are your opportunities to do these things, not just for today, but across the year. So, you know, everything from running our shelter for the homeless to wardening on Shabbat, that thing of being able to say, there are mitzvot available to you all year round. Make Mitzvah Day the day you commit to doing them for the rest of the year.
That's so powerful. Yeah. We're today, I know it's not Sunday, but a mitzvah can happen any day. Our synagogue's part of Greater Manchester Citizens, an alliance of mosques and trade unions and schools, and we're the synagogue involved to create a better world. So we're talking tonight about the issue of cost of living and how we as an alliance across Greater Manchester can make a difference. And the new home that we're in, actually, one of our sister organisations, Manchester Central Food Banks here, a homeless charity as well. So I'm really hoping this is our year to really start to make a difference and find partners to change as well. So I'm not sure, have we plugged the live enough? Do we need to just keep, should we just do it once more?
I think we should give people a night off of, you know, if Bake Off's finished and and celebrity, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here, is causing you, your blood pressure to rise, really you need a wholesome other opportunity to be able to, you know, get out and receive that theatrical moments in a different way.
Great.
Come and get your feel goods.
Where should they come for that, Robin?
Well, you may know that you need to go to jw3.org.uk. Buy a ticket, come and talk to us about all things to do with love, friendship and the future of our community. Just 2 weeks from now, that's come around really quickly. 1st of December at 7:30, and we'll see you there. Thanks for chatting and being with us, and see you soon. Bye.
Lovely to see you.
Bye.